You ready to go?
Ready as I'll be.
Fair enough. Let's not prolong this any longer. What's up? This is Movies on Up. When God couldn't save the king, the queen turned to someone who could, someone who can always bail me out, the king to my queen, Mr. Dave Bisella.
I am the king of everything.
He's the king. That's Mr. Dave. I am just the court jester. Ryan, we are Movies on Up. When God couldn't save the king, the queen turned to someone who could is our tagline.
I meant
for
to
this
say
week.
King of wishful thinking, but once I said I'm the king of, I blanked on wishful thinking, so just filled it in with everything because wishful
now
thinking
I get
is
that.
Included.
Yeah.
Included in
now
everything.
I get the reference. Yeah. I didn't really before, yeah. But now I gotcha. If you got where we were coming from with that tagline, send it to us in one of the three following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave your guess on our Facebook page, which is at facebook.com/moviesonup, or you can tweet your guess to us at moviesonup on the Twitter if you are correct. And if we choose you, we will send you the King's Ransom that is sometimes known as the Movies on Up prize package. Matthew Vaughn's Kingsman: The Golden Circle hits theaters this week. That is the sequel to 2015's Kingsman: The Secret Service, which is a favorite of ours. It may not surprise you, given that I think every movie that Matthew Vaughn does is a favorite of ours. Literally, there is not one movie that he's directed that we don't like.
He's one of the few directors where, like, I love Danny Boyle. Danny Boyle's done two of my three favorite movies ever, but there's ones that, like, they're okay. I like them, but I don't love them.
Don't need to see him again.
Matthew Vaughn, love everything. I will watch anything he's done over and over again.
This week, I'm sure Dave and I are both pretty hype to see the Kingsman sequel because we did like the first one so much. So we thought, this is an easy one. Sometimes we don't know on any given week what should our episode be. This one was kind of a no-brainer. We like Kingsman a lot. We like Matthew Vaughn a lot. So if we get the chance to just dedicate an entire show to that, yeah, let's not outthink the room here. Let's just go ahead and do that. So this week, without further ado, our discussion on 2015's Kingsman: The Secret Service, directed by the aforementioned, and he will be mentioned again and again and again, Matthew Vaughn, starring Taron Egerton, Colin Firth, and Samuel L. Jackson. Kingsman opened up to $36.2 million on the 13th of February, 2015, which was good for second place, which, in fairness, that movie, that weekend, second place was as best as you could do. It was almost $50 million behind 50 Shades of Grey in its opening weekend. Of course, that movie opens up on Valentine's Day, and it's just going to do an absolute ton of business. But I thought it was fantastic counter-programming. Okay, if all the women are going to get together and go get mushy and watch 50 Shades of Grey, then that leaves a bunch of dudes. And this was a great movie for dudes.
Yeah, and it was a great movie for February. We're seeing more and more over the years. We'll talk more about it in the fall preview because there's a lot to cover there. But where these kind of movies are released at this time have kind of went away.
Right.
This is typically the kind of movie, stylish, action, potential franchise based on a comic book.
That's a summer, right?
This is the kind of thing that would generally be thrown in a May or like a late July, August, at the beginning or end of summer to kind of catch that traction.
Like its sequel.
Yeah, they counter-programmed it. And I think it kind of came out with pretty much no expectations because Matthew Vaughn, as much as we love him, mm-hmm. doesn't have a massive box office hit
sure.
record. Stardust, not a big hit. Kick-Ass, he funded himself.
Yeah. I mean, his biggest was X-Men First Class,
and he was done after that movie.
Right.
It's from this director where if you like his movies, you're going to be stoked on it. But the average moviegoer, you know, from the director of Stardust, and the director of Kick-Ass makes some sense because people that's a lot of crossover there.
Right.
But I thought it was perfect time to release it, and I think it did way better than anybody expected. To open at $32 million in February against something else so strong, very damn impressive.
Yeah, for sure. To round out your top five for that week, you had the SpongeBob movie, Sponge Out of Water, American Sniper, and Jupiter Ascending in descending order. Kingsman went on to gross $128 million domestically, which puts it at 436th place on the all-time domestic list. It is one spot below a movie from last year that apparently was very, very funny.
I don't know.
You love it.
I love a lot of movies.
Ghostbusters.
Oh, I do love that movie.
Yes, you do love the Ghostbusters.
$81 million budget, though.
Yeah, $81 million budget, so it more than made its money back. Obviously, a giant success, and sitting right below a movie that I like the juxtaposition there. No matter what you think of Ghostbusters, you know, if you're the studio, maybe you think that it wasn't really all that successful. But, I mean, people are very aware of that movie. And for this to rank just a spot below it from a director that wasn't super well known, Kingsman, the source material, wasn't known nearly as much as the Ghostbusters source material and even the stars. I mean, certainly Samuel L. Jackson, big time star, but I don't think Colin Firth is necessarily a giant star here in the States.
Not when Sophia it comes Boutella, to action movies.
Right, like, well, for sure.
Yeah, I think he's with the people that follow like Oscar movies. I mean, he's a best actor winner in a best picture, so people know who he is.
In a movie that we may have already referenced at least once already.
Yeah. If you're watching a romantic comedy or an Oscar-type movie, I think you're very familiar with Colin Firth. Action fans, maybe not as much.
Certainly you would be after this one. It is one spot ahead of the Robin Williams robotic performance in a 2005 animated movie.
Robots.
Robots.
Which actually, just watched within like the last couple of months, legitimately not a terrible movie. I believe it's DreamWorks.
I don't think it is.
It's not?
Blue Sky.
Okay. Oh, that's even more impressive because they're terrible.
Yeah.
It's not a bad movie. I don't know if it was the timing was wrong or what, but it's not a terrible animated movie.
No, I mean, it was just slightly less successful than Ghostbusters.
I also love toys, so what do I know?
Fair enough. Just to give you some more context, and because I found some of this was absolutely fascinating, two spots above Kingsman, one of my favorite comedies, R-rated comedies, Borat, in 434th place, up a couple places higher than that, 413th. All time is apparently Martin Scorsese's best movie. It's the one that got him the Oscar.
Departed.
The Departed, right. So, I mean, Departed, not that much more successful from a box office standpoint than Kingsman.
And that's where it's interesting because the movies we were talking about.
What does any of that even
range,
mean?
Well, Ghostbusters, Departed, Borat, those are all movies that have cultural relevance. Whether you like the movie or not,
right.
They infiltrated pop culture. So for Kingsman to be sitting in that company with all those, it's interesting because I don't feel like it did. I feel like there's a lot of people seeing Kingsman Golden Circle not realizing it's a sequel. Yeah.
Right. But realistically, that's why I like to give some context with some other movies to let you know that, all right, if I tell you that Kingsman made $128 million, that's a lot of money. For an R-rated movie, that's a really good haul. But what does that mean? I think it's easier to put it in context of movies that people do know. Like Ghostbusters, people know. The Departed, people know. And to realize that from a box office standpoint, Kingsman is in their company, I think does kind of show you a little bit where that's at. 2015 specifically was a pretty good year for spy movies and parodies of spy movies in particular. A couple months after Kingsman, we had Melissa McCarthy and Paul Feig's Spy, which was another R-rated comedy that would top $100 million. Later that year, in November, we would get the latest installment from a series that each movie, Kingsman and Spy, would take a poke at, and that was Daniel Craig's Spectre, which made $200 million.
And you know what? Kingsman and Spy were two of my favorite movies of that year.
Yes, like, I think they both made our year-end list.
Yeah, and I'm not a Bond guy. Like, I've never seen a Bond all the way through. So it's not that I'm just like, oh, I'm drawn to spy movies.
I am a Bond guy and I still like
it. Yeah, like, it's not that I'm drawn to spy movies. I really liked both of them. And I love Matthew Vaughn, but I'll admit, when I heard he was doing Kingsman, it's like, I'm not nuts about the source material, whatever. I see the first trailer and it's like, I'm still not really sold. And I didn't rush out and see it. But when I saw it, it was like, all right, this is a dude that I've loved every movie he's made. Why I slept on this, I don't know.
That's a good point, because I remember not being super excited when this came out. But like you, all right, if Matthew Vaughn's doing this, I'm probably going to watch it, and I'm probably going to like it. I think I had already bought on to if Vaughn's going to do something, I'll watch it. Maybe not week one, but I'll watch it. This just kind of cemented that don't worry about what it looks like or what you may or may not know about it. If Matt Vaughn's doing it, I'm going to like it. And certainly I did. I had super low expectations for this. And I remember just being completely blown away.
It's weird to judge where my thoughts were on this because I loved Guy Ritchie. Lock, Stock, and Snatch. This is where he came. He produced.
Produced.
Matthew Vaughn
Matt
produced
Vaughn, yeah.
These movies. those were two great movies that I loved. And then Guy Ritchie started making stuff that I didn't like. And then he ended up with Sherlock Holmes, which wasn't bad, but I feel like it's a waste of Guy Ritchie. That's what I felt like Kingsman was going to be, that you have this great hip director who's now in the studio system and is going to make what he does work for a studio. No, that's not what I got.
This is not a studio movie.
No, you think back to Kick-Ass. Like, him getting Kick-Ass made was super impressive because nobody wanted that movie. Nobody wanted to make Kick-Ass. He funded that himself. He raised that money on his own. And it was, you know, successful enough to get a sequel. I think it infiltrated pop culture, like Hit Girl.
Right.
People know. It got Nicolas Cage and Big Daddy. It made its impression. And that's all from him. Every studio told him no. Didn't matter. Like, he just made the money himself and did it his way.
He went
way.
Back to his producer roots,
yeah,
and just produced
and he
the
did
damn
it
movie.
His way. So, okay, Kingsman, he gets studio money. He still did it his way because having that Kick-Ass success where he did it his way, it was profitable. So even if we are giving him studio money, let's let him do his thing. And it paid off, because I feel like as successful as this was, I feel like this is one that's gotten even bigger after release, because I feel like a lot of people slept on it, even though it did so well.
Right.
I feel like there's people that have caught on to it later that are like,
people slept
okay.
on it, and it made $100,000 less than Ghostbusters.
Exactly. And I mean, timing is a lot. That was February movie when nothing's out.
Yeah.
People
aren't going to the movies.
But I think since then, it being on TV and all that, I think it's gained kind of a cult following. And then you get the sequel, you add Channing Tatum.
Right.
And you had Jeff Bridges.
Mm, Julianne Moore.
Yeah. I'm really interested where the sequel goes money-wise. I feel like it's set up to open twice as big as the original.
They've already announced Kingsman 3, so I feel like the studio is really planning on it doing so well that it'll justify a second sequel that's got that great pedigree of being greenlit before the movie comes out. It's always a sure sign for success in terms of movies.
Yeah, John Carter.
Yeah, exactly. You mentioned Kick-Ass and how that was maybe like a hard movie to sell. I think on its surface, a spy parody, to boil it down in its simplest terms, is what Kingsman is. That's not as hard to sell, because there's been a ton of them.
Here's the thing. A spy parody that's not a comedy.
Right.
It's not, I think Melissa McCarthy.
It has funny parts.
Yeah. I think it's very entertaining.
Right.
Would never consider it a comedy. Whereas Melissa McCarthy starring as a James Bond type character.
Yes.
You can picture that. It's right. Funny. You clearly know what you're getting. But this real super over-stylized, we're basically taking Bond, making it this super stylized action movie, different kind of sell.
I would say it still goes in parody. You can do parody a couple different ways.
Oh, I'm not arguing that
it's
a parody.
Right, yeah.
It's just, when you hear parody, you automatically think comedy,
I think of the Scary Movie, Meet the Spartans, all that kind of stuff. But I think it just illustrates that there's multiple ways of parodying something. And something like Bond that's been in the cultural zeitgeist since the 60s, I mean, that's a franchise that's grossed more than $2.1 billion. And if you adjust for inflation, which you really ought to, that number is about $5.8 billion. And when you come at the king, more often than not with these parodies, you miss. For every Spy or Kingsman or even Austin Powers you have, three movies there, those grossed a combined $472 million. So those are wins. You've got a Johnny English that made $36 million over two movies. And you've got Leonard Part 6 that made just over 4.6. For every good parody, you can probably think of two or three that weren't as good.
Spy Hard.
Yep.
Remo Williams, kinda.
Remo
that
Williams.
Wasn't that, really a parody.
Another one that was supposed to be a franchise.
Yeah. So, I mean,
Agent Cody Banks, like, you can.
Yeah, that was like a kid Bond.
Right.
But I think that got two movies,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it was, like, you know.
I forgot that Johnny English got a sequel, which
yeah.
is insane.
So did Johnny English. And all those ones that we've mentioned, even Austin Powers, like, these were all your funny goofball spy movies. They were comedies. I mean, Kingsman is really about the only parody that I could think of that decided to go any other route than like slapsticky comedy.
I mean, it went a straight violent action movie. It went for a violent comic book movie is essentially what it did, but with great action.
A bit of the old ultra violence with that one. And it might be a bit difficult to believe, especially due to how much Dave and I slobber all over Matt Vaughn, but Kingsman is actually his most recent movie, and this is from 2015. Like we mentioned earlier, it's just behind X-Men First Class in the box office. The Golden Circle is the first sequel that Vaughn's directing. He just produced Kick-Ass 2. And if you add in a couple movies Dave's already mentioned, the ones that he produced, Lock, Stock, and Snatch, his resume really is almost unblemished. You could easily, I think, give him a pass for the Josh Trank Fantastic Four, which was an absolute mess. But the guy's been around movies since the mid-90s, and everything he's done has been, even if it's not for me, like that Eddie the Eagle movie that also had Egerton. I mean, I have not seen that, but it got very good reviews.
That was another one of those where it's like, that just doesn't speak to me. It's actually really damn entertaining. I think it's a different movie than it was marketed. It's really entertaining. It's a lot better than I would have expected it to be.
You have a movie like that. You know, you've got Stardust. You've got Kick-Ass and Kingsman, which are fairly similar in tone. It's really hard to pin down, like, what is a Matthew Vaughn movie. And we've had this conversation a lot over the past couple months. Like, it's easy to pick out, I think, a Quentin Tarantino movie. It's easy to pick out, like, a Steven Spielberg movie.
Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yeah, like, exactly. Some of these, and it's not a slight to any of them. Those are great directors. But what is a Matthew Vaughn movie? What is a Matthew Vaughn genre? But I would say, if you wanted to argue that Matthew Vaughn is amongst the greatest action directors that we have going, the resume could include just the night vision scene from Kick-Ass with Hit Girl and the church scene from Kingsman. They're both phenomenal.
Yeah, and this is where there's a director that I can compare him to greatly, because I think there's a lot of parallels between Matthew Vaughn and Edgar Wright. They're both genreless. They're both not really tied down to a genre, and they've both tackled multiple genres and done it very well. Their approach is different, but both of them are very stylish. Like, you could tell their camera work, and both of them essentially use the camera as another character or as a set piece, because when it comes to action, there's so many ways to film it. You could shaky cam it. But when it comes to, like, the fight scenes in The World's End or the fight scenes in Kingsman, the camera is part of it. You're there with it. And so I feel like from a style standpoint, Vaughn and Wright are very, very similar, because the camera is an extra character. Like, there are punchlines that are delivered directly with the camera, and that's it. Both of them pull that off, and both of them have made it a point not to be in one genre and get pigeonholed in there. Although doing Kick-Ass and then Kingsman, right, and then Kingsman 2, Kingsman 3, he's signed on for I Am Pilgrim, which is another
spy movie.
So, I mean, he might be finding that niche where, but you know what? If he can go and keep making movies like this, I'm fine with
it. Well, let's continue to pull that thread. If Matthew Vaughn decides he wants to continue making spy movies for the next 15 years, great action director. He's already got a track record of working with the current Bond in 2004's Layer Cake. If Sam Mendes decides he wants to step away from Bond, which all indications he's going to, him and Daniel Craig are both going to ride off into the sunset, I can't think of many better guys than Matt Vaughn if he wanted to,
you know,
to take the Bond franchise.
You don't want
him to do it because you don't want to watch a Bond movie.
I would
movie.
Watch a Bond movie.
Exactly.
Then. I don't know that he would want to, because it's so, not really blueprint, because they've all had their differences. I know enough about the Bond movies without watching them. I feel like if Matthew Vaughn did them, it would be like a mixture of the dark, gritty Daniel Craig ones with the ridiculousness and the over-the-top action of the Pierce Brosnan ones. Because that's what Kingsman is.
Right.
It's dark, it's gritty, but it's got this ridiculous action. But on that point, where Bond movies are generally fairly, they're slower burns for the most part. There's a lot to uncover in them. Not necessarily slow
burns.
There's
a lot of plot to them.
There's a lot of plot to them. So in that sense, that's where Vaughn shines. Because in Kingsman, if you haven't watched it in a while, you think of the church scene. You think of the climax with the music and the heads blowing up. You think of Sofia Boutella fight scenes. Like, you think of all that. You really don't think that it took 40 minutes or an hour before he even became Kingsman, because it's, you have Taron Egerton growing up. Right. You have him going through training. You have him quitting training. And you have him coming back. At no point is it not paced like an action movie.
Right. They did a good job of giving you that. I don't want to call it the Jurassic Park tease, because that's kind of what it is when you see the original, the four Kingsmen, and then you follow Lancelot on his mission to rescue Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
And that doesn't really go well for him. But you get to see that action that kind of gives you a little bit of backstory in the organization before you see the cog in the wheel.
Because then you look at this next to Kick-Ass, they're very similar. Because Kick-Ass, you get the same kind of thing. It's an origin story that's paced as an action movie the whole time. So when you look back at a Matthew Vaughn movie, that last half of it is always so strong that you sometimes forget that it took its time getting there, because it doesn't dance around. Like, it still gives you enough, and it's well-paced. It never feels like it drags. But then when it's time to pay off, it pays off everything. And, you know, that's where Kick-Ass 2 kind of suffered. I feel like the first 40 minutes to an hour of Kick-Ass 2 didn't have that magic. But then once it picked up, it did feel like a Matthew Vaughn movie for that last half.
But I guess technically it's not a Matthew Vaughn movie, so that's okay.
No, and, that's what I mean, is that's where you can see the difference. Like, if you watch the beginning of Kick-Ass and then the beginning of Kick-Ass 2, and the pacing is just, that's where he excels. And I feel like that's another thing Edgar Wright does. Their movies move along so well, and a lot of it is because they're very visually appealing. You know, you look at Baby Driver, Ansel Elgort walking down the street to get coffee for, you know, a 4-minute scene is damn compelling. Few directors could do that, where that's what a lot of the stuff this is. Him taking the joyride. The first fight scene in the bar with Colin Firth is so well made. And he's such
the bookended bar scenes, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where he basically has the same fight again.
Yeah, it's such a well-directed move. Looking back, like, I love Lock, Stock, and I love Snatch. Like, I really love those movies. But looking back at them and comparing them to where Matthew Vaughn is now, Guy Ritchie, I loved his movies, but I never, I guess, wasn't as impressed as a director. Like, he did cool stuff with the camera.
The stories were always really
cool. The stories were really good. The characters were really good.
Guy Ritchie's style is a bit like what I associate the style for Tarantino with, and it's the snappy dialogue.
Yeah,
Matthew
with
Vaughn,
some snappy camera work mixed in.
Right. Not that Tarantino can't frame a shot, because certainly can. But, you know, we've mentioned the word style specifically in this podcast a ton of times already about this movie, because that is one of the things that jumps out at it, is the style. And I think that one of the best embodiments of that style is their villain. To have a good hero, you've got to have a good villain. And Samuel Jackson is that villain. Valentine absolutely could have, he couldn't have been a Bond villain, because he doesn't fit the Bond style. But, you know, he's got the way overcomplicated plan for taking over the world. He's got a henchman, or woman in this case, that has a very unique skill set, and he's got a quirk of his own. So, okay, what makes a Bond villain? Now, how do we make a villain that's going to be on the same level but fit our style? And Valentine fit that
you
style.
You cast Samuel Jackson and tell him to speak with a lisp. He's so over the top, and he's so cartoony.
Right.
And there are a few actors that can pull off cartoony and still menacing as well as Sammy Jackson did.
And that's it. And I think that it's less to do with his performance in this movie, but because of who Samuel L. Jackson is as an actor. He brings this violence street cred with him. We know what Jules is capable of.
You know he's a badass motherfucker.
Exactly.
Whether he has a lisp and a pink button-up shirt and a hat, you know Sammy Jackson, so you know what he's capable of. I feel like it's the opposite of Stardust. Matthew Vaughn on the director's commentary of Stardust, he had people like Orlando Bloom and all these big-time movie stars loved the script and
right.
wanted to do it. And he said, I had to cast Charlie Cox because nobody knew who he was. You know, if I cast Orlando Bloom, okay, maybe he's nerdy at the beginning.
Yeah.
You know by the end of the movie, he's Orlando Bloom.
He's Legolas.
Yeah,
he's like,
but with Charlie Cox, you don't know who Charlie Cox is. So you get to see him transform, and you don't know exactly where he's going. I feel like it's the total opposite with Samuel L. Jackson. You know who Samuel L. Jackson is. You know what he's capable of. And then you put him in this role, which is way different, but still great. And then you throw in the awesome henchmen. Like, What's the dude in Bond? The
Oddjob.
Oddjob, yeah. That's,
Oddjob, Jaws.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's been guys that were quirky.
That were henchmen.
Right.
They're the second in command, but they kind of...
Menacing, say too much.
Yeah.
Gazelle was that.
And I love the little quirk. She cuts up everybody, and then he's knocking on the door, and she has to cover all the bodies because he doesn't like blood. Great. This dude whose plan is to blow up the heads of everybody on the world.
In this movie, somebody
sight.
That doesn't like blood.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not funny, but yet it is. You know what I mean? Like
it's different.
In a comedy, that would be played for laughs. This one's played for a smirk.
And a lot of times, villains are just villains. Like, they're just evil. Where he did great was, you don't agree with it. You understand where
apparently
Valentine's
Dave is a sociopath.
Like, you understand. Like, you... He has a...
I'm not saying he should have killed her, but I understand.
No. Like, look at Michael Keaton as Vulture in Homecoming, and even in that bad RoboCop movie. They're not necessarily bad guys. They're bad guys, but they're not villains, really. They're not evil dudes that you can understand their motivation. Sammy Jackson, you can understand what he's doing. It's not just for... I mean, it is for world domination, essentially.
Yeah.
But there's a little bit more to it than that, and how he got everybody on board, and it's this utopia of just the brightest and everything, and it's super comic booky, which I love.
Yeah.
Like, I love a comic booky plot brought to the big screen, and it doesn't get much more comic booky than this.
I guess that has always been a, maybe not so much the Mendez Bond movies, but it's always been a detraction of some other Bond movies. I think of like the later end of Roger Moore's run with like Moonraker, when there were like laser shootouts on the moon and stuff, and those were very, very comic booky and not very plausible. This movie, again, it's the style. It doesn't necessarily have to be grounded in reality, which in and of itself, you know, the Bond movies maybe would be better off if they didn't have to be either. I'm not sure. But this one just says, all right, we're going to completely suspend our disbelief. And yes, this is our villain. He speaks with a Russell Simmons lisp. Yeah, we've got a villainess who's got basically a katana for legs. And I do specifically want to talk about Sofia Boutella. She's quietly becoming a hell of an action star. And we mentioned her, I think it was last year, when we wanted to give her an award for, I don't know, an uppy for being like a complete badass. But I think she lost out to one of the Star Wars ladies or something.
I think Rey.
Yeah, probably. Or maybe Jenner. So I don't even remember at this point. But
oh, yeah, Rey would have been 2 years ago.
This lady was a dancer. She was doing music videos. And you can kind of see that in her fight scene. She brings that physicality and that grace. She had Kingsman in 2014. She also had The Monsters, Dark Continent she was in. And then she went on to be a huge part of action movies. Star Trek Beyond, I thought
she
was fantastic.
Where she was unrecognizable.
Sure.
But really, really good.
Yeah.
Whereas Kingsman, she relied on her physicality.
Yes.
She didn't have much acting
to
do. Star Trek, she relied on the action part, but her role was really, really good.
Right.
She was really good in this movie.
And then she would go on to Atomic Blonde and The Mummy this year. I mean, The Mummy didn't do well.
Which is a shame, because
What's
impressive about The Mummy...
Which I guess you could blame Tom Cruise more than you can blame her.
Yeah, well, yeah, because again, almost unrecognizable there. But what's impressive about The Mummy is you have this movie that is supposed to kick off this giant franchise, this giant universe. You have Tom Cruise attached to star... It was never written as a female mummy. They kind of kept it open, and they just kind of wanted to cast whoever they thought would do best. So they saw men, they saw women, which I think says a lot that she got that job. You have a Tom Cruise movie that's got a giant budget that's kicking off this giant franchise. You could have put a number of big-name actors or even actresses in that role. But the fact that she got it, I think, says a lot about her skill. And I think she's just really, really good. And she's not Gina Carano. You know, Gina Carano's had a decent career. Not the greatest actress.
Right.
I think Sofia Boutella has that physicality and that action ability, but is a really good actress.
I didn't really think about it, and this is always when I get into trouble. I didn't think about it until I just kind of sat down. You have Sofia Boutella, who was cast as the villain in The Mummy, which has always been a male role. Not that The Mummy needs to be male or female. It doesn't matter. It's a monster. But The movie is called The Mummy. She plays the role of the mummy. And I know that there's been kind of a rally cry for women in movies getting really good roles. And now this was Tom Cruise above the title, so this was a Tom Cruise movie. But I'm a little surprised that there wasn't maybe more of the support for this. People complain, and rightly so, when a movie character, you know, maybe they could be white or black, but it ends up being a white character. Or maybe it could be male or female, and it ends up becoming a guy. Something like The Mummy, for it to become a woman, I think is a great thing.
Because even in the Brendan Fraser ones, they were all dudes.
Yeah, they were dudes.
It's in the summer that gave us Wonder Woman and Atomic Blonde also. So
which
you
she
had,
was also in.
I know. So you have two female-led action movies. I guess they weren't taking the spotlight off of Tom Cruise. I feel like if anybody else but Tom Cruise plays that role,
maybe,
then maybe it's more of a, hey, she's a really good mummy.
Certainly there was the support for Wonder Woman, and that ended up being a good movie. And Atomic Blonde, I haven't seen yet, but I've read good things about that as well, and I'm sure she's fantastic in that. I've got no reason to believe that she wouldn't be. It just seems like, I don't know, maybe I'm surprised that people didn't pick up the flag for The Mummy, because nobody
I think
else
there
did.
Was so much
maybe it's because they knew it was a bad movie.
I think
thought,
it was just so much negative around this movie that they thought, you know what, she's a good actress, let's not drag her down with it.
Hey, she's in this other thing over
she
here, let's
the,
look
like,
at this
Kevin Bacon, where remember when RIPD came out and it was just this major bomb, and everybody's like, oh, are Jeff Bridges and Ryan Reynolds done, like this is such a bomb, like that's gonna Kevin Bacon was third billed in that movie. But yet his name was nowhere in everything. And it's like, I feel like that's kind of the thing. It's like people are like, oh, are Tom Cruise done? Blah, blah, blah. Because her name never came up.
Right.
Who's the other female lead?
Annabelle Wallace.
Okay. She doesn't come up. I feel like everybody just blamed Tom Cruise and
Kurtzman. Alex Kurtzman.
Yeah. So
we spent a significant time in the podcast talking about the villains because they were great and they did add a lot. And having a villainous that's able to cut people in half very early in the movie does kind of help to establish that tone. But you've had these great characters of Valentine and Gazelle, and then you add in some other really solid supporting
Mark
performances.
Strong, Colin Firth.
Yeah, and Michael Caine. So you've got this great safety net built to surround a lead, which Taron Egerton at that time, and even really to this day, outside of Matt Vaughn's stuff, he doesn't have a lot going on. But, you know, if he were unable to shoulder the load of this movie, I think it still would have been good because of everything else that was built around him. But I think he actually did a fantastic job in this. He was able to play the troubled youth, and he was able to transition to that Kingsman character by the end of the movie. Well, like you mentioned the Charlie Cox thing.
Or Aaron Johnson and Kick-Ass.
Yeah,
like
right.
Nobody knew who Aaron Johnson was when Kick-Ass came out. So, I mean,
They become this thing?
Yeah. So that's a common theme with Matthew Vaughn stuff. And you have so many, I don't know how to say this without sounding, you have so many boring white guy actors that are supposed to be the next big thing. Sometimes they're just thrown out there and it's sink or swim. Other times you try to kind of work them in and you put them in with a good cast and hope that they can at least hold their own. But I think he stood out. Like, I think he just jumped out. And I mean, he went on to headline Eddie the Eagle. He was in Legend, that good Tom Hardy movie. He's who I wanted as Han Solo in the Han Solo movie.
He's got Robin Hood coming out.
He's the lead in Robin Hood.
Yeah.
You know, he's gotten work since. So it's not like one of those that, like, I think of something like Cam Gajande. He was this one where he was in the Twilight movies, and but there was no really telling if he could carry a movie. You had Paul Bettany coming off of Legion. I think it was called Priest, where it looked like another Paul Bettany Legion-type movie, but yet Cam Gajande was just, like, a major part in there, and it almost felt like they were trying to force Cam Gajande on there, and it didn't work. The movie sucked. He sucked. He's had small stuff since then, but I just think of stuff like that, where you have movies where it's almost like Blade Trinity. Hey, let's introduce Ryan Reynolds as an action star. Here's this successful franchise. Even if he doesn't live up to snuff, you still have Wesley Snipes, and you have this successful franchise. So I feel like it's that kind of thing, where we're going to throw him out there and hope that he succeeds, and if he doesn't, we're covered. Where, you know, if Charlie Cox fails in Stardust, I mean, I guess it's kind of the same thing because that cast was stacked. I guess more Aaron Johnson and Kick-Ass is the better example. Where
I almost feel like even in Kick-Ass, like, they knew they had an ace up their sleeve with Hit-Girl, where, like, even if he sucked...
Where she was an out of nowhere,
she was great, too, but that character, like, she was fantastic in it, and at this point, I can't imagine another actress doing it. But if somebody would have... I mean, they probably... I think that Hit-Girl sticks out more of that movie than...
Oh yeah,
Kick-Ass anyway.
Oh yeah,
hell, you may as well just call it Hit-Girl and forget that Aaron Taylor Johnson was actually in it. But certainly, this movie, we talked for 40 minutes before ever actually mentioning the star in the movie, and it wasn't like we were trying to avoid him because I think it was great being able to play both of those characters and to be able to bring in. You mentioned Vaughn being a hip director. Egerton actually adds like a bit of coolness,
an
like
edge,
young edge,
yeah,
to and this stuffy British spy character.
And I mean, that's
even
where,
when he's a stuffy British spy,
yeah, he's got this
right, he's totally gonna mow this girl in the back door after he kills everybody
and
else.
That's where, like, another thing where Matthew Vaughn excels is you look at Kick-Ass, you look at Stardust, and you look at Kingsman. These characters, all three of the main characters, start and end completely different places. You know, you have Kick-Ass as the nerdy high school kid who ends up a hero. It's Charlie Cox is the nerdy, like, Sienna Miller's doormat who ends up a hero. And then this kid that just doesn't know right from wrong, just has no purpose, becomes a hero. And it's cool because their beginnings are so well-defined. Everything he does feels like an origin story. That's why he was perfect for First Class. And I'm still bitter that I wanted an X-Men franchise with Matthew Vaughn. They want to give him the Man of Steel sequel. No. If you're going to give Matthew Vaughn Superman, start over. Let him have a Superman to carry over. Superman is one of the most boring characters in pop culture history. But if Matthew Vaughn's doing a movie, I'm into it. Because it's probably going to be a Superman we've never seen before.
And that means that Henry Cavill's going to have to be recast.
Oh, thank God.
This is normally the part in the show where if we were doing a movie because the sequel's coming out, I would ask you, hey, Dave, so what do you think about the sequel? Are you excited for it? But I think we're kind of past that at this point. It's a Matthew Vaughn movie. Of course we're excited for
it. It had a Channing Tatum in it. Like, it looks ridiculous. Like, it looks like they took everything that was ridiculous about Kingsman and one-upped it. They Fast and Furious did it.
Without adding The Rock, but I guess you add Channing Tatum, who's kind of like the white guy version of The Rock. I don't know.
But if you look at Fast and the Furious movies, they keep upping the game to where they have to get more and more ridiculous. Mission Impossible movies, this looks like it's doing the same thing, where it's just taking all this ridiculous action and just cranking it up a notch.
You take one organization in the Kingsmen, you add in the Statesmen, so that is kind of sequelizing things, I guess. You know, one Alien was great, but if we had a bunch, wouldn't that be even better? One Terminator is fine, but what about two? Apparently, we're just James Cameroning things.
Yeah.
That's where my mind goes initially. But yeah, I mean, Kingsman, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's almost a shame that this movie didn't come out earlier in the summer, just because the summer has been a kind of down. I mean, not even kind of. It's not an opinion thing.
Numbers-wise,
right.
Miserable.
Right. Numbers-wise, it's been down. And I do think that a lot of that is because there just hasn't been fun movies this summer. I mean, there's been a couple, and they've done well. But I think, really, after Spider-Man, I can't think of many fun summer movies. I think this would have been great to be out in, I was going to say 4th of July weekend, but that was right around where I think Homecoming was. But yeah, maybe come out at the beginning
late
of August
July
or late July.
Early August instead of September.
Yeah. We're going to talk about next week how loaded the back half of the year is. But this is a movie that I do think is going to do well. It already made, what do we say, like 128 the first time. Realistically, I think it's maybe close to $200 million.
150 at least.
Yeah.
Like, I think, because, I mean, people are going less, but there's always
room. I think it's just because they're bad.
There's always that, I mean, this time of year, historically, they go less. But if you give them a reason to go, they'll go. There have been movies that have come out in early to mid-September that have had great success because you're in that kind of doldrum in between area. So I'm thinking it opens pretty strong in that 50 to 60 range, and I'm thinking it ends in like 150 to 160.
Yeah, I mean, somewhere in there, I think would
although
probably.
Although I'd be happy if it's more.
Yeah, right. Certainly, at this point, I'm really just rooting for it to be enough of a financial success to just keep that third one on track, whether it ends up being, and at this point, it is to be directed by Matt Vaughn, but at this point, more of him, I think, is really a good thing. You mentioned the projects that he's got coming out, the I Am Pilgrim and Kingsman 3. That, at this point, that's really all we know from him, but the more his movies make money, the more Matthew Vaughn movies we get to see. And if you haven't guessed by now, I think that we both think that's a good thing. No Matt Vaughn movies to talk about next week, but we do have at least a couple directors and some movies that, like Kingsman, we've been excited for the whole year. We've just had to wait an awful lot of the year to get to, and we'll run down those next week for you for our fall preview. And then we are into the month of October, which is going to be
a little different this year.
A little different. We're going to do, I guess, a mega list of our favorite Halloween movies, horror movies. Yeah, most of which we've mentioned before. I'm curious to see what our favorite horror movie is.
I would have a guess right now.
I mean, I guess, but you know, sometimes, like, this is an unrelated, like, non sequitur, but when I fill out my NCAA tournament bracket for the basketball,
Creighton Final Four.
I always pick Creighton. Yeah, no. I look at every game and I think, who's going to win this game? I never start with, like, oh, I'm going to pick Duke, and I just fill in Duke all the way. So I'm always surprised at my national champion. I'm like, oh, I guess I think Creighton's going to win, based on everything else. But I'll be interested to see how our list ends up, because it's a combination of the both of us, so it'll be...
I just think, when I think of horror movies, and I think of movies that are in our top 5 or 10 all-time movies for both of us,
yeah,
there's one that comes to mind that I would be shocked if it's not our co-number one.
Yeah, I haven't sat down to do the list yet, so I feel like the possibilities are endless. Maybe when I actually put pen to paper, things will become a little bit more clear.
Maybe he gets knocked out by Deep Star 6. You never know.
Possibly in a giant upset. Stick with us for another couple weeks, I guess, to find out where Deep Star 6 is. You may have to wait the entire month of October. Probably not. But
it's in my top 50.
not mine. But we do have a couple fun episodes coming up. I think October is going to be fun, in our fall preview episodes. One of the ones that we look forward to throughout the course of the year. And certainly Kingsman, a movie that's not going to make that preview, but it is a one that we've been looking forward to a lot. We hope you're as excited as we are, and we hope you're excited for the fall preview next week. But until then,
keep it up.